everybody. Welcome to season 3 of Boo, My Dad Says. My name is John.
And I'm Becca.
And we are your tour guides through the world of the paranormal.
We've got a whole lot of history, a whole lot of mystery, and a whole lot of weird.
So sit back, relax, and get ready for a spine-tingling time. All right, dear. Happy Tuesday. How are we?
Howdy ho. It's pretty good. I have a floater in my left eye. And you know how in the summertime, sometimes you have fresh fruit out on the counter and sometimes you might get a little fruit gnat. Well, if you got a floater in your eye, sometimes it's hard to tell where the gnat is and where the floater is. So it makes catching a gnat pretty difficult. But other than that, I'm good.
Well, and here I thought we were going to talk about the fact that we're actually recording on a Tuesday and not on a Sunday.
Well, that too. We are recording on a Tuesday. My Tuesday's been pretty crazy.
Well, for those of you who are wondering why I'm recording on a Tuesday to be released tomorrow on a Wednesday, well, by the time you hear this, it will be Wednesday, or it could be later. Let's just say we recorded the episode once.
And we had some technical difficulties.
I didn't like the sound of it. There were a lot of just extra sounds and noises and things like that.
And I'll tell you about those too. Let me just tell you, we got the new desk in the office. And the new desk and the microphone arm do not get along. They are not friends. We're having a lot of echo and reverb. What's the word?
Yeah, echo would be a good way of putting it.
Anyway, it's just making a racket.
Because if you bump the desk, the springs that are in my microphone arm will make a bong noise. And
not even if you bump the desk. If I take my fingernail and tap the desk, you all would not believe the noise that comes across. But anyway, so where are we?
A little demonstration.
That was a knock. Okay, this is my fingernail. Okay, crazy town. Anyway, so we're re-recording. So if you'd like to get in touch with us, you can reach out on social media. You can get us on the Facebook. You can get us on Twitter and Instagram. If you would like to join our VIP group, you can look at us at Boo My Dad Says, the group and the page on Facebook. You can also email us at john@boomydadsays.com. If you like have any stories you want to share or any old thing you want to tell us.
You can also, if you want to support the show, you can support us through a couple different avenues. You can sign up and follow us on Patreon, and there are several different tiers of programs that you can select from, as low as $1 a month. And you can also go to buymeacoffee.com/boommydadsays, and you can do a one-time donation that way. That would really help cover our costs of dog
getting
food.
Getting a muzzle for this beast in the floor. Lousy.
She is a cute little beast, and you know it.
Oh, she is. But she is quite the little alert dog. I got up this morning to go to the bathroom, and bless my little sweet bones, because we're in the Tennessee. But, you know, I am a little petted maybe in one area of my life, and that is light wakes me up. So normally, like, we've always had like room darkening curtains and all that. Well, we've not installed the new curtains yet.
And you're blaming this on Tennessee? How?
I'm not, but I'm blaming my pettedness on being Southern and special. And so
I just thought that meant you were from North Carolina.
I am from North Carolina. Shut up. I see where you're going with this. But anyway, so I have this little like sleep mask thing that I wear because the light bothers me. Like sound doesn't really affect me as much, but if it starts getting light, I wake up. Well, I got up to go to the bathroom at some ridiculous hour because I drank a lot of water last night.
It was like 5:15.
It was way earlier than normal. So I go into the bathroom, come back out, and I had the sleep mask like up on my forehead, you know, like I just slid it up when I got up. Anyway, the dog, you would have thought Hitler had just walked through my bathroom door the way she was growling and barking. And I was like, oh, good Lord, child, go back to bed. It was crazy.
Yeah. It definitely makes me realize that I think she would try to protect me if
she would alert us and then she would run under the bed. She'd say, hey, there's somebody. I'm out. Peace. I've done my job. That's what she would do.
Peace out.
Peace out. So where are we going today? Where are we going today, dear?
We are going down to Savannah, Georgia.
Oh, Georgia. Georgia, the devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. I could sing.
He was he was in a bind. He was way behind.
He was willing to make a deal. I do love me some Charlie Daniels. All right. Yep. So we're going down to Savannah, Georgia, and I'll go ahead and get started with our history. So Savannah's recorded history began in 1733. That is the year that General James Oglethorpe and the 120 passengers of the good ship Anne landed on a bluff high along the Savannah
River. Every time I hear good ship, I'm thinking, it's the good ship.
That's funny.
Lollipop.
Every time I've read this while we're doing the research and stuff, when I see the good ship Anne, it's A-N-N-E. I think of Anne of Green Gables. It's Anne with an E. Oglethorpe named the 13th and final American colony Georgia after England's King George II. Savannah became its first city. So the whole plan was to offer a new start for England's working poor and to strengthen the colonies by increasing trade. The colony of Georgia was also chartered as a buffer zone for South Carolina, protecting it from the advance of the Spaniards in Florida, which I found hilarious. They needed a buffer zone because the Spanish people were conquering and taking over Florida. So under the original charter, the people there were free to worship as they pleased. And that is like the main sticking point there with many of those early colonies was they left England for religious freedom to be able to worship how they chose. Well, because of that, rum, lawyers, and slavery were all forbidden in Georgia for a time. Upon settling, Oglethorpe became friends with a local Yamacraw Indian chief, Tomachichi. Oglethorpe and Tomachichi pledged mutual goodwill, and the Yamacraw chief granted the new arrivals permission to settle Savannah on the bluff. As a result, the town flourished without warfare and the accompanying hardship that burdened many of America's early colonies, because they chartered this peace deal right when it was first established and things were good. Savannah is known as America's first planned city. Oglethorpe laid the city out in a series of grids that allowed for wide open streets intertwined with shady public squares and parks that served as town meeting places and centers of business. Savannah had 24 original squares, and 22 of them are still in existence today. So we go through the Revolutionary War. We go through the Civil War, Reconstruction, all of that. Savannah flourished after the American Revolution. Farmers discovered that the soil was rich and the climate was favorable for cultivation of cotton and rice. Plantations and slavery became highly profitable systems for whites in the neighboring Low Country of South Carolina. So Georgia, the free colony, legalized slavery. The transatlantic slave trade brought many African Americans through the port of Savannah. Many who stayed in the area formed a unique Gullah culture, the coastal communities in Georgia and South Carolina. That kind of reminds me a lot of like the Louisiana, the Cajuns, mixing that culture with the South. So there was a very high incidence of that as well there in that Savannah area in this Georgia, along the Georgia coastline there into South Carolina. With the wealth brought by cotton, residents built these lavish homes and churches throughout the city. After the invention of the cotton gin on a plantation outside of Savannah, the city rivaled Charleston as a commercial port. Many of the world's cotton prices were set on the steps of the Savannah Cotton Exchange, and that building is actually still in existence today. But, like all old cities, it was not spared of its misfortune. But Savannah, like most old cities, was not spared from misfortunes. Two devastating fires in 1796 and 1820, each left half of Savannah in ashes. But residents rebuilt. The year 1820 saw an outbreak of yellow fever that killed a tenth of its population. Savannah also survived fires, epidemics, and hurricanes, but they always bounced back. And I was doing something a couple weeks ago where I had to look up the population of Johnson City, and it was like around 65,000. So if 6,000 people died, if a tenth of Savannah died from yellow fever, approximately 1,000 people died from COVID last year in our region. That's not just Johnson City. That's like our entire like Northeast Tennessee region here. And the reason I know that is because we used to live by the little memorial that one of our neighbors set up, and they would have a little count up of neighbors lost to COVID-19. And by the time we moved, it was just a little bit over 1,000. So I think six times that much for the yellow fever. And that was just one of the epidemics that came through. Pre-Civil War, Savannah was praised as the most picturesque and serene city in America. It was known for its grand oaks, festooned with Spanish moss, and its genteel citizenry. The Georgia Historical Society was founded in that area, and magnificent Forsyth Park acquired its ornate fountain, a sight worth seeing. Again, this architecture, these people, their churches, their homes, everything about them was over the top. It was just beautiful, ornate, lavish. Again, they had money, they had slaves, they had crops, and so they were going to make sure everybody knew that they were doing pretty good. During the Civil War, the city suffered from sea blockades so strict that the economy crumbled. Impregnable Fort Pulaski at the mouth of the Savannah River was captured by Union soldiers in 1862. The city itself did not fall until Union General William Tecumseh Sherman entered Sherman's March in mid-December after burning the city of Atlanta and everything else on its path in his march to the sea. Upon entering Savannah, though, Sherman was said to be so impressed by its beauty that he could not destroy it. On December 22nd, 1864, he sent a famous telegram to President Abraham Lincoln offering the city as a Christmas present. I wish somebody would give me Savannah for a Christmas present. I mean, not from war or anything, but that'd be lovely.
Although maybe a trip to Savannah.
I've actually never been to Savannah, so there's that. After the end of the
Civil War. You could have been to Savannah, but
I did, but the daggone hurricane came. I couldn't go.
After what we're referring to is back when I was in the National Guard, right before we got married. We had planned on her driving down to visit, and the hurricane went through.
And said, "You're not going down to Savannah." So at the end of the Civil War, Reconstruction period began in Savannah. Food was scarce, the economy was in ruins, but of course, despite all those hardships and the added burdens of prejudice, the freed slaves who remained in Savannah built a thriving community with its own churches, schools, and economic strength. Savannah became one of the most historically significant African-American cities in the nation. At the turn of the 20th century, cotton was king again. Savannah thrived, as did her new industry, including the export of resin and lumber. Then the boll weevils came. Dad burned boll weevils.
Boll weevils.
Boll weevils is just the weirdest word ever. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Honey, you think half the Southern words are weird.
Boll weevils, not a Southern word, is it? It's a critter, isn't it?
Well, Dad, I guess it's just more associated with the South and the cotton trade.
I suppose. The boll weevils destroying most of the cotton in the state's economy about that same time that the Great Depression began. It wasn't until the post-war years that Savannah bounced back again, not just economically, but also culturally and aesthetically. A group of women banded together to preserve the historic structures threatened by the wrecking ball. Their brave endeavors began the historic Savannah Foundation, which is credited with saving the beautiful architecture that was the foundation of Savannah's charm. And of course, boatloads of tourists come through Savannah's area, through the towns, and see all the different historic places. I mean, that sounds kind of dumb. People come to see the historic things down there in Savannah. But there's the Pirate's House, which was the inn mentioned in Robert Louis Stevenson's book, Treasure Island. The Old Pink House, the site of Georgia's first bank. The birthplace of Juliet Gordon Lowe, who was the founder of the Girl Scouts. Telfair Academy of Arts and Sciences, the first, which was also one of the first public museums. The Lutheran Church of Ascension, the Independent Presbyterian Church, the Cathedral of St. John the Baptist. There's actually The first African Baptist church was established in 1788. And Savannah's Temple Mikev Israel is the third oldest synagogue in America, which I found was really interesting because you think of most early colonies being Protestant or Catholic. You don't really think of Jewish communities being in coastal Savannah. At least I didn't. That was kind of surprising. Anyway, in the last 10 years, about 50 million people come to visit Savannah. They are drawn into its elegant architecture, ironworks, fountains, green squares. Its beauty is rivaled only by the city's reputation for hospitality. It is one of the country's most popular vacation spots, and I don't want to go.
Maybe we'll have to go next year, dear.
Putting it on the calendar.
We can go down and visit old Tybee Island while we're there, too.
I do love a beach. We were going to think about going to Charleston this weekend, but I think the weather is not going to cooperate. Boo!
Well, anyways, every city has to have a good old haunted cemetery somewhere. And and Savannah is no different. And tonight we're going to be hitting up the Colonial Park Cemetery, and it's considered one of the most haunted locations in all of Savannah. But before we get to that, Derek, where's your trademark snark?
What snark? I don't know what you speak of.
There it is.
I don't know what you're talking about, snark. I've been at the pool all afternoon. I'm a little sun-baked. Actually, I was freezing. It was really cloudy and windy. So I'm like cold.
And then also recording an episode.
And recording
for the second
an episode.
Time, all the jokes just don't hit.
My jokes are just gone. Yeah. I forgot what I said that was so funny because it's just a one and done. You get one shot at my good humor here.
Yeah, she's a one take lady.
One take wonder right here. Yep. The O'Neaters. $10 to anybody who can say what movie that's from. You don't count. But I'm going to, and don't, no, stop, stop. I'm going to punch you in the nose. Hush. No, but seriously, give us a comment there on the Facebook if you know what the O'Neaters is from. It's a fabulous, fabulous.
First person who gets the answer right, there might be a little bit of swag or something in it for you.
Get a swag. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, but you can't look it up. Be honest. Don't be Googling it. But like legit, some of you will probably know this because I feel like our fan base is pretty good. I wanted to start the show with I feel good, I feel great, I feel wonderful. But we might start that with, I shouldn't have said that. I can't use it later. Messing up my one joke again. All right, talk us through the cemetery.
Yes. So the Colonial Park Cemetery opened in 1750 and it is the oldest burial ground in Savannah, which can still be identified by your average tourist. There are a few more burial grounds which were used prior to 1750, but they were covered up, built on top of, or just paved over. The habit of building over the dead has earned Savannah the title of the city that lives upon her dead.
That's terrible.
No wonder it's haunted.
No doubt. That's not nice.
Mm. You know, all those dead people, man, they just want a place to rest. But the first ghost that we're going to talk about, and believe it or not, it's actually a fake. Ah!
Newsflash. They're all fake.
Newsflash. You haven't seen what I've seen.
Nor do I intend to.
But the first spirit that we're going to be talking about is Renee Rondolier.
And Renee's a boy, right?
Renee is French.
Okay, yeah. Just double check. So.
But he is actually the most famous ghost that's not a ghost at the Colonial Park Cemetery.
That's the dumbest thing you've said all day. The ghost that's not a ghost? That don't even make a lick of sense.
Sure it does.
The ghost who's not a ghost. Okie doke.
Because he's not a real ghost. So he's a ghost, but he's not really a ghost.
Okay. If you say so.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen,
You were asking me for the snark. I was just bringing the party. Yeah.
I know, but then I come back with my deadpan.
Well, moving on.
Renee's ghost is reported to be seen walking through the cemetery or hanging from the hanging tree.
Are you coming to the tree?
Yeah, and any points for what movie that's from, too?
Oh, all those people should know that that's from The Hunger Games.
Well, now you know the answer.
I did. That's like normal. The other one is older. That reference. I have a film or song reference for everything.
So, yes, the hanging tree, which it is towards the back of the Colonial Park Cemetery. How do people know that this is Renee's ghost? Well, in real life, Renee was a very large person, standing almost 7 feet tall. It was said that one night, Renee was caught not long after murdering two young girls inside of the cemetery. A mob was organized to find and lynch Renee.
Okay, well, where were these girls' parents? That's the real question.
Well, honey, back in the day, you didn't have to come home until the streetlights turned on.
They didn't have streetlights. They didn't have electricity back then.
All right. So maybe till the sun went down.
You weren't supposed to leave your farm.
You know, anyways, yes. So they organized a mob to lynch Renee. After Renee was hung in the nearby square, residents started to report a large shadowy figure walking around the grounds of Colonial Park, Renee's favorite place to play. But as I said, there is a problem with this story because it is, for the most part, likely to be not true because there wasn't any kind of references, any news that no records, there was any no. records of a of two girls being murdered or anything like that. So it's definitely a, as Becca likes to say, suspish.
It is sus.
But who knows? Now, Savannah, as we said earlier, it kind of puts you in the mind a little bit of like New Orleans. Well, the voodoo community is alive and well in the city. Savannah is home to, and has been for a long time, a thriving voodoo culture. Many voodoo practitioners live in and around Savannah, and many of them have moved outside of the city of Savannah due to various reasons.
So, let me just interrupt real quick here. So, like, can you look up in the Yellow Pages or Google, I need a voodoo practitioner, and locate one that way?
I don't know. I guess you would look under V for voodoo.
V for voodoo. That is just crazy. Sorry, I didn't realize there was that many down there.
So before Colonial Park Cemetery was closed at night, it wasn't uncommon for early visitors to find the remnants of a voodoo ceremony performed just the night before. The soil from the graves was used in various voodoo rituals. In addition to the soil, graves were sometimes raided in order to obtain human bones.
Ew.
Now, these stories are true. To what extent the Colonial Park Cemetery was used as a place of ritual, that can be disputed. But the fact that it happened is a fact. It was, well,
it's a fact.
History. It is history. But I don't think there's a single knowledgeable person who would dispute that the Colonial Park was used for voodoo rituals and ceremonies.
Are now, you saying I'm not educated? What's happening here? I see where you're going with this.
Now, we're going to be stepping away. Doggone
there
that.
There you go.
Yeah, I started talking with my hands again.
You've got to calm down. I'm being good over here. I haven't whacked anything. I haven't walloped anything.
So now we're going to be stepping off into the world of the weird just a little bit. Not so much ghosty, but it's just kind of one of those things that makes you go, huh. But Savannah has a habit of losing bodies.
That's creepy.
On June 19th of 1786, Nathaniel Green succumbed to heat stroke on his plantation of Mulberry Grove. Now, if you're wondering, Nathaniel Green, as we're talking about General Nathaniel Green, who served under George Washington.
Sorry.
There's your next movie reference.
There's your movie.
Keep them coming. See if we can find the answers.
That's a good one. It's done being a general. Sorry, go ahead.
The major's body was transported into Savannah by boat the following day. In the late afternoon, his body was transported to the cemetery for burial. It was decided that his body would be placed inside of the Graham family vault.
Not the Green family, but nope, the Graham.
The Graham family vault. The Graham, well, they weren't exactly using it because the Graham family, they fled the country as sympathizers to the crown a few years earlier. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, I guess what was theirs became the Greens. After a few years, Nathaniel Green was laid to rest inside of the vault. It was opened up for his son, George Washington Green. George died when his boat overturned near Mulberry Grove. The location wasn't a very lucky place for the Green family, sounds like.
Apparently not.
He was placed in the vault with his father on April 4th, 1790. So that was just 4 years.
I wonder if it stunk.
No, I mean, they still probably did the, you know, embalming, or at least, you know, to some extent, I would assume.
There's still going to be some, a little bit of stink on that.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe.
So, and then after that point, it only took about 30 years to lose the body of Nathaniel Green and his son. So, I guess people just forgot where they buried him. A committee was appointed and tried unsuccessfully to locate the final resting spot of Nathaniel Green. Finally, in 1901, Asa Byrd, president of the Rhode Island Society of Cincinnati.
Now, here we go. I do remember this from yesterday. So what does Rhode Island or Cincinnati have to do with Savannah? How about that?
Well, I guess they're kind of like the DAR, Daughters of the American Revolution or something.
Yeah,
maybe,
but that's not putting a different city and state into a whole nother city's name, like for their foundation or their whatever. That just is weird.
That almost reminds me of that movie that had James Garner in it. Was it Support Your Local Gunfighter or Support Your Local Sheriff? About... somebody's school.
I didn't watch Westerns. I don't know about these things.
Somebody's school for refined women back east or something. It was just.
Are you going to send me there? Is that what I need to be refined?
Refined.
Maybe that's the problem. Is I didn't go to finishing school.
Anyways, the president of the Rhode Island Society of Cincinnati came to Savannah for the purpose of trying to track down the final burial place of Nathaniel Green. During the inspection of a number of family vaults in Colonial Park Cemetery, the body of the general and his son were found in the Graham Mossam family vault. There was a number of pieces of evidence which left no doubt that the bodies were the bodies that they were looking for. So then in 1902, the bodies of Major General Nathaniel Green and his son were moved to their final resting place in Johnson Square. Here in Savannah. They were placed underneath the monument which bears his name. This obelisk has been seen by millions of people every year as they stroll through the streets of Savannah.
Hmm. So they did finally find out where he was.
They found him.
There you go.
So with a reputation of forgetting about where they bury their dead, building on top of their dead, and burial plots, desecrating graves, putting roads on top of graves, losing bodies. Yeah, there's no doubt that there is a lot of ghosties down in the Savannah area.
Mercy.
And, you know, some of the other sightings that they have, that have people have witnessed at the cemeteries, people have seen shadows walking among the headstones. And another common sight is mist figures moving through the cemetery.
Hmm. Mist figures.
And then there have been lots of EVPs that have been caught on recording.
What the hairy is an EVP?
An EVP is electronic voice phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. Okie dokie.
Basically, you can take a tape recorder back, you know, years ago, it was just a regular old tape recorder. Now they use like a lot of digital recorders, like just a little handheld recorders that you would, you know, take and, you know, record notes in a class or
record
like
a mixtape off the radio.
Yes. Anything like that. Or the perfect ones are like the ones like the doctors would use, the little Olympus digital recorders that they would use to record their notes on. Mm-hmm. You know, you could take those and, you know, set them running, ask questions or whatever. And then sometimes the spirits will communicate on a different wavelength that those recorders can pick up that maybe the human ear can't. So when you play it back, you can sometimes pick up voices.
It's like if you play AC/DC backwards or something, you get like Satan worship music. Is it similar?
No, not quite like that.
I feel like it's kind of the same.
No.
Nope, you're wrong. Moving on. No.
Anyways.
This is what you pay me for, is to be a skeptic.
Yes.
Oh, wait. Don't get paid.
Well, maybe someday when the sponsorships pick up, we can...
There we go. I can buy myself a coffee.
You can get paid. Well, our next place that we're going to be exploring, and it is quite haunted, is the Savannah Theater.
The theater. I love the theater. You were worried I wasn't going to be snarky. You was wrong.
Oh, I love that movie. I could watch that movie like even in the summer. And here comes the devil cat now.
This is the satanic cat.
The historic Savannah Theater was built in 1818 and can be found at 222 Bull Street on Savannah, Georgia's Chippewa Square. To this day, it is widely considered to be one of the oldest theaters in the United States. In the last 200 years, the theater has gone from showcasing live theater in the footlights to screening some of Hollywood's best pictures ever made. On the evening of December 4th in the year of 1818, the doors of the Savannah Theater officially opened to the public for the first time ever. The productions that were presented to the people of Savannah were the comedy, The Soldier's Daughter, and the farce, Raising the Wind. William Jay, a well-respected British architect, designed the original structure. The following year, in 1819, William Jay built the much-celebrated Telfair Mansion for Alexander Telfair and the Owens Thomas House, also completed in 1819. So this guy must really know his stuff. He must be a pretty well-known architect. The building that housed the theater is a three-story structure that features astounding beauty with its highly detailed wrought iron at the front, along with its spectacular sign. It was constructed by Mason Amos Scudder, who also built the Independent Presbyterian Church, which conveniently can be found just around the corner from the Savannah Theater. I wonder if that was like a twofer.
Hmm.
You know, I'll catch you a deep...
Bring your church bulletin in for a discount at the next showing.
Yeah, I figured, you know, it was like maybe he cut him a deal so he didn't have to go too far to his next job or something.
Well, there you go.
The interior of the theater was decorated by William Jay's friend and fellow Englishman, William Etty.
They're all named William.
William was a very popular name back then.
Apparently.
Etty painted murals of the dramatic scenes featuring gilt eagles, green wreaths, and crimson panels.
Crimson and clover.
The first couple of decades were rough for the Savannah Theater as it changed hands several times and was even auctioned off on two separate occasions. However, the theater's luck began to change in 1838 when a stable stock company got things organized, and by December of that year, they were able to incorporate the Savannah Theater. During the antebellum era in Georgia, the Savannah Theater became the premier source of entertainment of the state and would often host performances, including the most popular songs of the day.
Like Crimson and Clover.
Yes.
Sorry.
In the past two centuries, the Savannah Theater has endured many disasters. On August 31st of 1898, the structure was subject to immense damage when a hurricane tore through Savannah. The theater's roof was ripped off like a can of SpaghettiOs. Yes. It said can of SpaghettiOs when I was doing my research online, and I thought I would just send that on up to you listeners.
Because you need to hear about the can of SpaghettiOs getting busted open.
Yeah. There you go. And then because of the can of SpaghettiOs being opened, the auditorium was turned basically into an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Of SpaghettiOs.
Less than a decade later, in 1906, tragedy struck the theater again, this time with a fire.
And the fire spelled F-A-R.
The fire. When the theater was remodeled for the second time in a decade, it received a new brick facade, completely discarding the theater's original design by William Jay. Despite the hurricane and the fire, the Savannah Theater continued to be the city's main house for plays, music, and other cultural events. But now, with the new creation of the Municipal Auditorium in Savannah's Orleans Square, the historic Savannah fell out of favor with the people of the city. It's almost kind of like, you know, when the Pinnacle came in, then the Carmike just kind of went pootered
out.
Yeah, kind of fell out of... you know, it's kind of hard to beat those nice reclining seats. And
yeah, but now they have nice seats.
Yeah, now they have it too when AMC bought them. But anyways, rabbit trail, shiny object.
Squirrel.
If that wasn't enough, the theater suffered another fire in the year of 1948 following...
They need to stop smoking. That's the problem. Probably their cigarettes were getting out of control.
Maybe. Who knows? Following this event, the building received a facelift, a dramatic overhaul. The theater now reflected the times with a new Art Deco style. The new Savannah Theater reopened its doors, this time as a movie house, on October 21st, 1950. The first screening was Mr. 88, featuring Dorothy McGuire and Burt Lancaster.
I thought you were going to say Burt Reynolds.
So, let's talk about some of the ghosts here at the theater, now that I've given some of the history on that. We've had a lot of history in this episode, and not enough spooky stuff.
That sounds like a good plan.
There's no question that people are fascinated by Savannah's history of hauntings. Are there still those who remain skeptical of these supernatural occurrences?
Yes, they are.
Well, of course. But you shouldn't ignore the fact that people have indeed had personal experiences and that many others believe wholeheartedly that there are these ghostly occupants, sometimes unnoticed ones, who will still hang around the city of Savannah. Obviously, you don't have to look very hard to find haunted spots in Savannah. It seems like every motel, store, and square in town has a ghost story to tell. And, well, the theater is no exception. So there are three main ghosts that the Savannah Theater is known for. And the first one was a ghost named Betty. And she was an actress at the theater, and she was never able to move on as she loved the stage too much. She can be seen most nights behind the curtain, dressed in her costume, ready to step out and give the performance of her life. Secondly, we have the ghost of a young boy named Ben. He can be found up in the balcony harassing the spotlight operator. He is just a little curious, as most boys are, and this little impulsive and aggravating ghost loves playing pranks and is clearly enjoying his afterlife at the theater. Go.
So this little Ben character kind of sounds like Puck out of Shakespeare. He was one of the little mischievous little sprites. He kind of like caused trouble. Who was the guy I'm thinking of? The little spirit that caused trouble.
What?
I don't know. Superman or the Flash? Mischievous Piddalick.
You're talking about Mr. Mixious Piddalick.
Mixious Piddalick. Yep. That's a weird word too.
Yes, try to say that five times fast.
I think I would swear something bad would come out if I tried to say that really fast.
Lastly, the most infamous spirit at the Savannah Theater.
I thought we were talking about Ben.
Well, I was going to expound on his story a little bit later.
Okay, so actually, sorry. My bad.
The most infamous spirit at the Savannah Theater is known to those who work at the theater as the director.
Like Quentin Tarantino?
Is he a director? Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
He is a director.
Got it.
Having spent his life behind the scenes, the director relishes every opportunity to step out of the shadows, finally enjoying a little recognition. While he enjoys his role in the afterlife, he is unable to let go of his passion for directing, and he can still be heard shouting at actors and critiquing their performances.
So he's still being bossy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Okay.
According to one report, the Savannah Morning News claimed in an 1895 edition that the Savannah Theater is truly haunted. Police patrols would often hear applause and other ruckus coming from the theater. However, the theater was closed and no living could be found inside. This became such a common occurrence that the police patrolmen stopped their futile investigations into the theater, and they allegedly noted as much in their logbooks. Another article that came out from 1895 reported that the owner of the Savannah Theater witnessed on numerous occasions very odd happenings that he just simply couldn't rationalize. Early one morning, the owner decided to get a jump on the day, and he headed to the theater in hopes of getting there before anyone else had a chance to arrive. He opened the door and entered to find that he had succeeded, and he was the first one there.
Yes, I made it.
Yes, I made it. He decided to check things out in the theater. All seemed to be good in the lobby, up in the balcony, and in the audience seats. He then went back to check out the backstage area. Again, all was in order. The last thing to check on his list was the dressing room. When the owner entered the dressing room, he was stunned to see that a small fire had ignited during the hours of the night and subsequently burnt a quite noticeable hole in the floor. Nothing else in the dressing room was damaged, and the fire had seemingly put itself out. You wouldn't have even known that there was a fire if it weren't for the eerie circular hole burnt right in the center of the room.
That's weird.
Yeah, but I'm not convinced that that is entirely
that's just paranormal. Some hanging out or some voodoo.
But, well... Well, if it's voodoo, then
going up for paranormal. I mean, like people there having a seance or something, because that's what you do around places like that, right?
Yeah. Now you're thinking. Now you're coming around.
Making fun of it.
Oh, well, you were doing a good job of sounding like you were defending it. I was about ready to applaud.
Defending it. That's hilarious.
I was about ready to applaud. I was like, finally, she is coming around.
No.
This wasn't the only strange occurrence to happen in the dressing room at the Savannah.
I'm sure it wasn't.
Now you're overcompensating.
No, I'm being like, I'm sure scandalous things happened there. They just weren't of a ghostly nature. That was my crack.
Oh, okay. I got you. During one evening, just before a big show, a group of female dancers were getting set to perform.
Mm-hmm. See, where I knew where this was going.
You did, because
we recorded
take one.
Yes, but I actually had already forgotten that. But when you said female dancers, keyword there's dancers.
They began changing into their costumes when they felt like something was watching them.
As it always
Something
does.
Evil. Unnerved, well, more like freaked completely out, and understandably so, the dancers ran out of the dressing rooms.
But
some
naked.
Forgetting that they had actually
hadn't
finished changing.
That's dumb. I don't care how scared you are. Like, cover yourself.
That's what you haven't been truly scared.
I was scared on the Wild Eagle.
That's different.
I was pretty terrified.
You have never had the hair on the back of your neck stand up before.
Actually, I did. Excuse me. I did have that happen. We'll save that for another show.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but what a sight that must have been, and the true thrill for the men in the audience.
I see a bunch of dirty old men.
Now, some believe that the Savannah Theater is cursed, and it's all based on that somebody had found a penny that was stuck in the wall from the year of 1818 when it was built. The owner at the time when they found the penny was named Fred Weiss. And he would carry the penny with him at all times, and he carried it for good luck. But one day, he lost this penny in 1948 when he was in New York City. And then everything went straight to pot after that because the theater went up into a blaze and was nearly burnt to the ground.
Oh, dear.
Now, we're going back to Little Ben that we talked about. We're going to expand his story just a little bit.
Oh, Little Benji.
There was the spotlight operator had been interviewed and had given the experience that she had had. Drew Jones, who is the house manager of the Savannah, shared one of her many experiences in regard to the rumored hauntings at the theater. After all, she is considered to be the resident ghost whisperer. Drew ran the spotlight for 2 years, and it seemed that virtually every week she would feel someone tug on the back of her shirt, much of the way like a child would have done when they were trying to get an adult's attention. All you parents out there, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Mama, mama. That tugging on the shirt, trying to get your attention.
You're like, please leave my clothes alone.
Yeah. But every time she would turn around, she would find that she was alone. After a while, she realized that the only explanation was that she wasn't actually alone and that there was a ghostly child who wishes to work the spotlight with her. And the apparent story behind this ghostly child is that long ago, a boy named Ben was playing in this area near the spotlight, and for unknown reasons, he died. When Drew would inevitably feel Ben tugging on her shirt, she would turn around and firmly say to him, "Not now, I'm busy." And Ben would then politely stop. Drew was also featured on the Biography Channel's My Ghost Story when she discussed the story of Ben. Ben isn't the only ghostly child that has been spotted in the theater. From time to time, people have also reportedly had run-ins with the spirit of a little girl. There's not much information known about this ghostly girl. No backstory, no name, but she seems to prefer her
anonymity. Anonymity.
Are we sure there's not such a thing as anonymity?
I'm fairly certain. This is your English teacher wife speaking here.
I miss that word every time.
Yeah, you do. You do.
Anonymity. Anonymity. Anonymity.
It's not anonymity, like a sea critter. Anonymity.
Anonymity.
Oh, my gosh. She didn't. She wasn't known. Just say that.
She didn't want her name known. She preferred to remain anonymous.
There you go. Say anonymous since you can't say anonymity.
You can't really say it either.
I can too. Shut your face.
But she takes much delight in moving around.
She takes as much delight as I do harassing you. That's how much delight she took in moving around the theater.
That was the best job you've ever took in your life is becoming my wife to harass me.
I know. Somebody had to do it.
Well, there you go. That is Savannah. What do you think, dear?
I want to go to Savannah, not for the ghosts, but I want to go check out the food scene and check out the historical buildings. That was one of my favorite things in Charleston was like hearing all the history and the tours and the ghost. I even went on a ghost tour in Charleston. Thank you very much, but it wasn't scary. It was more just history. It was more historical.
Scary is in the eyes of the beholder.
Yeah, for me, like, you know, this, like, you could take your 3-year-old on this trip because, like, it didn't scare me at all. And I'm a big fat chicken. So there.
Well, guys, I hope y'all have a great rest of the week. And we will be seeing you all next week. I think we're doing Haunted Roads next week, dear.
No, you don't have the schedule.
Not in front of me.
We went through this. I wrote it down on paper. It's in your phone. I think we're going to Tombstone next week.
Oh, that's right. Tombstone. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. We are going to Tombstone next week.
I have to keep you straight.
Well, I didn't have my calendar in front of me.
Well, that's the beauty of handwritten and analog schedule is when you write it out, that helps to enforce it in your memory. So when I wrote all that down the other day on my little index card, because I'm old school, I like a paper planner.
Yes. So next week, we are going to Tombstone.
Meow, meow, meow. That was terrible. And we weren't supposed to laugh that hard. It wasn't that funny.
All right, folks. We hope y'all have a great night. Good night. And God bless, my friends.
Toodaloo.